Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Have a new leader in the United States Senate. It is John Thune, the Republican from South Dakota. He won on the second ballot. There were two ballots here taken. On the first ballot, this was the breakdown. It was John Thune got 23, John Cornyn from Texas got 15, and Rick Scott got 13. But it's not first past the post. You have to have an outright majority of those casting ballots. There are 53 Republicans voting in this leadership election here, so you had to get 27. Now, I've asked for a vote total here. How many John Thune won by, we don't know, but that second ballot was between Thune and Cornyn, and John Thune has prevailed. It's interesting about John Thune. You know, he came to the Senate in 2004, and he beat another leader in the Senate, Tom Daschle. Tom Daschle had been the minority leader and the majority leader, and it was John Thune, who had served in the House previously, who beat Tom Daschle in 2004. So he will be the person working with President-elect Trump and presumably House Speaker Mike Johnson in the new Congress.
Well, that's Mr. Pergram at Fox News reporting on the latest from Capitol Hill. John Thune getting that majority leader spot. This among the many appointments that we're seeing from Donald Trump come in for his cabinet picks. A lot of them raising eyebrows, but they all seem to be in that lane of America First, of what he has committed in his campaign, in his election victory to this point in time. And we want to talk to our friend DeRoy Murdoch about how he is feeling about the cabinet assembling around our president-elect Donald Trump. Nationally syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, DeRoy Murdoch with us once again. Welcome back to the show, DeRoy. It's good to have you here.
Great to be with you again, Annie.
So as the cabinet picks are coming in, any that you are super excited about, any that you're raising your eyebrows surrounding?
Very good question. I'd say just overall, the speed at which President-elect Trump is putting in his team is incredible. I mean, he's certainly not wasting any time at all. You know, we've got, I guess, rumored Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who's very capable as the, ranking member on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Somebody spent a lot of time thinking and speaking and probably writing about foreign policy. My colleague, Pete Hegseth at Fox News. I was out last night. I came home and just saw something online about Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. I thought, okay, somebody's speculating or, you know, some wild, crazy rumor. I looked, oh, he actually was nominated by the president. It was really a big surprise to everybody. And Trump is picking very interesting people, very unconventional people. People like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to lead this Department of Government Efficiency to go through the entire budget and the entire bureaucracy. As apparently Musk just said on X, he said, threat to democracy? No, threat to bureaucracy.
Yeah. Well,
that was very good. And this is all terrific. So my only concerns are, I'm looking right now, we only have 216 Republican seats in the U.S. House, and President Trump wants to remove Elise Stefanik and put her in as U.N. ambassador, and Mike Waltz of Florida, Republican congressman from Florida, put him in as national security advisor. I think they're both very capable. I think they'll be terrific in those positions. But it's not like we've got a nice big fat majority with a lot of House seats to spare. I mean, it's been 1 week since, it's been 8 days since the election, and we're still not at 218. So you know, I hope it gets to the point where, you know, we can handle having two people not there as, you know, very difficult, close and controversial votes come up. Or maybe these people have to start their jobs March or April or something once we've had special elections and so on. So that's my only big concern, is just picking people out of the House when there's not even a majority yet.
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking to watch as these numbers are creeping closer to 218. We haven't gotten it yet, but of course, if you have 219, 220, 221, at the end of the day, you have very, very, if almost no room for error. If somebody gets sick or correct, has a something that they have to attend to, it's a very dicey situation. The Department of Government Efficiency, the Elon Musk Vivek Ramaswamy pair up to try to get our government to work more for the American people, to be more efficient. What do you think about this particular establishment of Donald Trump's vision going into his next presidency?
I think it's fantastic. And I don't know if it will be an actual cabinet department or if it will really be sort of like a, you know, super commission or an office in the White House. I'm not sure if it's actual legal structure. But in terms of what they intend to do, you've got Vivek Ramaswamy, who's a very successful investor and I think investment banker type or a hedge fund person who's big in the markets and very intelligent, very sharp and very, very eloquent. And you've got Elon Musk, who's basically the richest man on earth and also essentially the Thomas Edison of our era, going through all of the different cabinet departments and agencies and boards and commissions and so on that the federal government has, and finding out things that they're doing that they shouldn't be doing. They're either, there's no real constitutional mandate for them to do these sorts of things. In many cases, there may be something worth doing, but rather than having, you know, one or two job training programs, we might have a dozen. You know, can't we just collapse them into one or collapse them into two? Other areas where the private sector could do a better job, or state and local governments could do a better job. I have no doubt these guys are going to be able to go through and find all sorts of things in the government that Uncle Sam should not be doing. And then it'll be up to Trump and Congress either to pass legislation to pare things down, or quite simply, you know, I think a very easy way to do it is just don't put any money in the budget for it. You know, you can keep the XYZ commission, just don't provide any money, and they can keep their name on the door, but they won't have any money to do anything, engage in any activity, and the people there either can be given severance offers and told, you know, here's a check for $100,000, tax-free, good luck, you know, go to grad school, buy yourself a vacation home, whatever it is. In some cases, people may not want to leave, in which case, you know, I think you'll have a lot of people, the Department of Justice and the FBI, for example, need to be cleaned out, the people who've been engaging the Russia hoax and so on. If they won't leave, you know, just move them to the FBI office in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah.
And if they like it up there, they can stay there and, you know, be out of the way. And if they don't like it, they can resign and go get jobs at law firms or go become local prosecutors or whatever else it is.
Dory, do you feel
creative ways to do this?
Yeah. Do you feel like the idea of spreading out our government structures so that they're not all located right there inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., does that offer a pretty distinct advantage at being able to efficiently get the job done, but maybe paring it down a little bit?
I agree with that, definitely. You know, I don't see why the Department of Agriculture is in the middle of a completely urban area with no farms. So maybe the Department of Agriculture should be, maybe St. Louis?
Yeah, we'll take it. We got a lot of my family has a farm. We can take it right out here.
A lot of farms within a 20-minute or half hour to 1 hour drive where you are, much more than in D.C. That's one thought. You know, maybe the Department of Commerce should be in some more industrial area. I don't know, maybe somewhere in industrial Pennsylvania, perhaps. Maybe the if it's worth even keeping, and that's very debatable, but the National Endowment for the Arts maybe ought to be out in Hollywood, where a lot of the arts industry is. That would make a lot of sense, and you know, they'll be closer to the actual areas that they either regulate or subsidize or oversee, and people in those areas can go in and say, look, you know, rather than having to jump on a plane to go talk to somebody in the Department of Agriculture, you hop in your car or hop in your truck and go talk to some bureaucrat about whatever it is going on your farm that needs attention. I think that'd be very sensible, and I think you get people probably who do that who will be much more actually dedicated to the mission of whatever those departments do, rather than just saying, okay, I live in, you know, live in Georgetown or Arlington, Virginia, in some, you know, very comfortable place, and, you know, drive 10-15 minutes to your office in Department of Agriculture and spend all day long telling people what to do.
Yeah, I think that it's an innovative idea. It's a different way of doing the same thing and potentially working to make it more efficient. I think that that type of creative thinking is really important to being able to achieve the task ahead. Before we let you go, we're speaking with Dory Murdoch right now. I'm curious what you think about Congress's ability, razor-thin majority likely for Republicans in the House. Now we have a Senate majority leader in Senator John Thune. Do you feel as though Donald Trump's mandate in his reelection, being able to sweep all those swing states, do you feel as though the Republican Party as a whole in D.C. is going to be united to get done the job that Donald Trump was sent there to get? Or how quickly will this turn petty?
That's a good question. I think certainly early on, given Trump's tremendous mandate, there's no question that this man won not just the Electoral College, but the popular vote, and not just the popular vote, but a majority of the vote. You know, people have won the popular vote, but it's 47-40%. He won 50.3 or so percent, so he won a majority of the votes. Excuse me, all seven swing states. So no question that the American public voted for his program and voted to reject Bidenism and Kamalaism. And I think Republicans would be very smart to keep that in mind and give the American people what they want, which is the Make America Great Again agenda. Now, imagine at some point people start, we could start getting closer to the midterms, might start peeling off and doing their own thing. But certainly I think at the beginning he's coming in with such a strong head of steam and such a singular unique and unusual personality in and of himself, and this leadership he's showing even from, 2 days after the appointment was when I think he named Susie Wiles the chief of staff, first woman chief of staff in the White House, by the way, ever. So I think given all that, I think certainly the first year and a half, I think the GOP will stay for the most part united. After that, people might start getting itchy and going to do their own thing for the most part. But it is important. I really wish we had, 225, 230 seats rather than maybe, 219, 220 or whatever wherever this ends up. I really wish that the National Republican Congressional Committee had done a better job handling the House races. I heard from someone that Kevin McCarthy raised about $400 million for that purpose when he was Speaker, and Mike Johnson's raised about $60 million, much, much, much lower. So I checked those numbers for sure, but that's something I was told by a candidate who, by the way, got very little money and lost a very competitive, winnable seat. And unfortunately, he came about 2,000 votes short, and if he'd just gotten probably $100,000, we'd probably have one more seat in the GOP caucus.
Yeah, a massively influential seat swing with every race that gets called here at the end. Yeah, I think the Kevin McCarthy highlight is such an important one, too, because that was what he was known for. And he really did take the Republican House from a minority into what the only thing that succeeded in 2022, really, for Republicans was that House swing. And then they bounced him right away. I just really hope that we don't get into that mess quickly.
We avoid that nonsense. And the funny thing about, I've always kind of wondered, not always, lately wondered, are you better off with a tough, combative, effective moderate, or somebody who is philosophically solid as a conservative but is very weak and not a good leader? And I think that McCarthy versus Johnson gives us an illustration of that. I think in terms of his philosophical principles, Johnson's probably more of a real conservative than McCarthy, but just the inability to raise money, less of a combative nature, less pugnacious, and I think we find ourselves in a weaker position with him than with McCarthy, who might not necessarily be fully on board with the entire agenda, but when he's got his marching orders and he knows what's got to be done, he's much better at keeping the troops together and being able to get a media strategy and get a message out and pound it into a victory.
Yeah.
As opposed to Johnson, who seems like he's great in terms of principle and philosophy and ideology, but just not very strong and folds under the slightest bit of pressure. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds here.
Indeed, yes.
Thank
Hopefully
you.
It'll unfold well.
Joy, we appreciate you as always and looking forward to our conversations here as we lead up to the inauguration. Thanks for being with us today.
You bet. Okay, very good.
Take care. Bye-bye. Dory Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, who joins us each Wednesday. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to dip into, just briefly, just give us a minute here, because Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about the Biden-Trump sit-down conversation today, and we got to know what she had to say. Don't you want to know how that went? Wouldn't you love to be a fly on that wall? Well, we'll find out when we come back, so don't go away. Karine Jean-Pierre gets asked about the little conversation that took place today between the current president and president-elect Donald J. Trump. We'll be right back.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Gosh, I'm serious. And you might be feeling this way if you're listening right now. It's just like, oh yeah, Donald Trump won.
It's about every, during the show is different because we're constantly looking at news. But outside the show, it's probably just like everybody else in the regular world, is like about 2 or 3 hours go by and you go, what's the latest? What's new? What's happened?
I feel like I've underestimated the slog that this has been for so long. I mean, it's like you just, this is an exaggeration, but like if you're going to battle every day, you just know what you know what the job is. You know what the task is, and you prepare yourself for that, and then you go do the job. Again, not in any way, shape, or form claiming that we have some sort of valor that exists with those who do the literal version of that, but you just have a mental headspace that this is what the job entails. And every time, I cannot put into words, which is my job, I cannot tell you how much personally this has lifted a burden off of me. And every time I go to a new segment, I'm like, oh yeah, let's listen to Corinne Jean-Pierre talk about Joe Biden sitting down with Donald Trump. That sounds like fun. I mean, I never thought that about listening to Corinne Jean-Pierre before. I'm like, we have got to hear this. Isn't that exciting?
Actually, yeah. It's weird.
Actually, yeah.
I can't. We got the puppy cam up on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. So sorry to y'all who are watching right now, and we're replacing the puppy cam with Corinne Jean-Pierre. But it's worth it, and it's the job. Let's listen in, Brad, to what took place here just recently.
Regarding the meeting.
Yeah.
President Biden has given a lot of statements about his concern for the U.S. democracy. Did he share any of those concerns with President-elect Trump in their meeting about what he feels should be done or needs to be done?
So I'm not going to go into granular detail of what was discussed.
That's shocking.
In the meeting.
I thought we'd get nothing but detail.
It was indeed very cordial, very gracious, and substantive. And I mentioned at the top, national security was discussed, domestic policy issues were discussed. I had an opportunity to speak with the president in the Oval Office right before coming out to do this press briefing, because I wanted to make sure that I got what the president wanted to share with all of you, so certainly that everything that I'm saying is sanctioned, if you will, by the president. He wanted you all to know that the president-elect, again, was gracious, came with a detailed set of questions. It was, again, substantive. But I do want to take a little bit of a step back here, because it's really important to note, and you're going to hear me continuing to say this over and over again, the importance of having a smooth transition, and importance of having an orderly transition. The president respects the will of the American people and wants to make sure that occurs. That is what he believes the American people deserve. And so that is as far as I can go. That is what I am sharing with you from the president directly. And look, We're going to make sure, as Jake Sullivan was saying, that his team has what they need, right? They want to make sure that it is indeed an efficient, effective transition so that we hand over the people's business so that they can continue the people's business.
Can you say how President Biden answered some of those detailed questions?
I will say that the president certainly looked forward to the meeting, appreciated the conversation, and answered any questions that the president-elect had, offered up his thoughts, but I'm not going to go any further than that. Again, Mary.
You said gracious, cordial, yeah. Substantive. The president obviously hit on a wide range of issues, but yeah. Did he get a sense that the issues that he was impressing upon, that any advice he was giving was being well-received?
I think so. I think that's why the president was saying, was wanting me to let you all know that there was a very good back and forth, and it was substantive, as I mentioned before, and I want to be mindful. It was a private conversation, so I don't want to go into specifics or details, but look, they met for more than 2 hours. They met for a very long time, or nearly 2 hours, pardon me, and I think by the length of the meeting tells you that they had an in-depth conversation on an array of issues. And so, look, the president reached out to the president-elect wanting to make sure that he gave an opportunity to the president-elect, afforded him that opportunity to have a meeting with him to talk about the different issues that matter to the American people. But nearly 2 hours says a lot about how the meeting went.
Any plans to keep a line of communication open?
The president is always going to obviously keep that line of communication open to the president-elect. We got to remember, this is not about the two presidents. This is not about President Biden or President-elect Trump. This is about the American people and what's right for the American people. And if anything, the president has led by example, right, over the last week on making sure that we have this cordial transition of power.
Can I just ask one other topic? Yeah. President-elect Trump's nominee for defense secretary has questioned whether or not women should serve in combat roles in the military. Wondering what the administration makes of that. Is there any concern about women's ability to serve in certain roles going forward?
I think we've made ourselves really clear. I'm not going to speak to this pick. That's not the president's going. The president-elect is going to lay out his personnel and who he wants to fill these cabinet position, who he wants to be in the White House with him, and we will give them the space to do that. But I think we've been very, very clear about how we see the importance of gender equality, the importance of women in the workforce. I think we have been an administration that has led on that issue, and certainly we do not agree with those views, but that is for the president-elect to speak to his picks, and I'm going to let them do that. Gotcha.
You said the president-elect came with a detailed list of questions. That's surprising to me. What was on this list?
I'm not going to go into details of what was on the list. I shared that, and the president wanted you all to know that because we want to be very clear. It was actually a substantive meeting, nearly 2 hours. There was a lot discussed. There was a lot of back and forth.
Can you pause this for a second?
Not going to go into specifics. I think if the president-elect...
Why is Joe Biden so willfully negotiating in a substantive meeting with Hitler?
That is exactly what our commenters are saying, too, on the live stream. Yeah, let me pull up a couple, because I was going to say the same thing. Chris says, wait, Biden looked forward to meeting with Hitler?
Yes!
And then right after that, Ender goes, well, I do suppose it's good to hear they're leading towards a smooth transition to Hitler. They've done this to themselves.
Well, this is the problem. I'm listening to this, and I'm going, like, this is encouraging. I don't doubt. I really, truly don't doubt. Well, let me just put a percentage on it. I think there is a 35% chance that Joe Biden voted for Donald Trump.
Okay. I see you're 35.
I don't think it's likely, but I definitely think it's well within the realm of possibility. He's in Delaware. Well, his vote's not in Pennsylvania. It's not going to throw the thing. Joe Biden was wearing a MAGA hat practically walking out. I mean, Joe Biden did wear a MAGA hat.
Yep. Yep. He looked like he was in his element. I don't know if you saw any of the 5 minutes, because they met for 2 hours, and Corinne Jean-Pierre was like, they met for 2 hours. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. That's really great.
They had a really cogent, responsible, and thoughtful conversation.
Yeah.
You call him Hitler.
It was substantive. And I want to say this again to your next question. It was substantive. And then to the next one. But regardless of that, they met publicly for about 5 minutes. There wasn't long that the press was there and they were screaming questions. And they were just kind of sitting there in those like royal looking chairs, just shaking hands and looking at the cameras and whatever. And then they went back and had that meeting. But during that 5 minutes, when you saw Biden come out, I don't know that I've ever seen him happier as president.
He's so cheery.
He's like in his element, doing the jokes and
cheery.
Having fun.
Yes. I can't get enough of it. I'm watching him and I'm like, the dude is happy.
Yes.
He looks like he's been liberated.
It's true. It's so strange.
Viva America!
You're
Trump!
Watching. It's like, well, this looks like a very nice little meeting they're having. Like one, like they didn't just debate and one of them knocked the other out of the race. I mean, he's like, hey, this is actually a pretty good time we're having.
Go
Maybe
back.
He forgot.
Let's listen. Just tune back in, because this is. I just want to note that the discussion with the new Reich here went well, according to Corinne Jean-Pierre. Go ahead.
Wants to share his set of questions to President Biden. He certainly can and will if he chooses. But wanted to give you as much information as I could without you know, going into too much specifics on a private conversation.
Was the list typed out on a piece of paper?
I don't have. I appreciate the effort there, Jeff. I don't have anything beyond that.
Did the issue of the fact that President Trump did not acknowledge President Biden as the winner of the 2020 election come up today?
What we want to do is move forward. We do.
Really?
No, seriously. What we want to do is move forward. We respect the will of the people. There was an election, as you know, last week, and the American people spoke. And so the president is going to make sure that he puts the American people first. He's going to make sure that we move forward in this process, in this transition process, in a way that is respectful to the American people and to lead by example. And so that's our focus. That's what we want to do. I think the president has shown that in the past week of that leadership. And so that's what you're going to hear. That's what we're going to continue to do in the 68 days that we have left in the semester.
So, Corinne Jean-Pierre answering questions at this press conference. This is auditory, of course, but it's also, Ryan, I'm going to have you kind of narrate what happens here for those who are going to hear some. But I want you to tell us the visual parts, because Joe Biden was standing at an event, I believe, in the White House. Jill Biden is speaking. She's behind a podium.
These are some are going to graduate. Joe and I are also preparing for what's coming next.
Joe does the sign of the cross.
Jill Biden's standing there, and I think they're talking about graduates or something or whatever. But Jill is, it's Jill's stage. Joe Biden.
Yeah, Joe's off to the right.
Joe's doing what Joe does, which is standing by and waiting for someone to tell him what's next.
Yeah.
And she says, Joe and I are also looking forward to what comes next. And he's just standing there off to the side, what, maybe 8 feet away from her, 6 to 8 feet to her right, for what's next. And he does what every man who realizes that your retirement is about to set in and you're going to have to spend all this time at home together. And he crosses himself.
Yep.
As a Catholic would do.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
It's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny.
Yeah, he pulls off a joke there.
I like this guy.
One. Yeah, this guy's all right. It's almost as if for a moment you forget that he is still the president and has had a terrible presidency. But at this moment, you're like, hey, all right.
Oh, the books that are going to be written. The stories that are going to be told. There are things crawling around X, as you would expect them to be crawling around X at this point, about how Joe Biden dropped out of the race and who said what and when and who posted the message of him dropping. Remember when he dropped out on Twitter and like didn't speak for days?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was like, is he alive?
I was on vacation. Trump had just been shot. Then within days, Joe Biden's like, I'm out. But he did it on X, which mm-hmm. is just a really interesting place. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Elon Musk was grateful for that. And then the next thing he turns around is Kamala Harris for president. Wink, wink.
Yeah, within 15 to 20 minutes of the initial dropout, wasn't it? It was pretty quick.
There are lots of discussions about it, and I'm looking forward to seeing the real details on record testimonies of what actually took place. So Corinne Jean-Pierre, very positive and upbeat about the cordial and substantive discussion between President Joe Biden and President-elect Donald Trump.
Yeah, great.
Joe Biden, I mean, like, I just feel like he's going to be like, I'm going to tell you where all the bodies are buried.
Oh, I hope so. I hope he starts today.
Yeah.
I hope that's what the meeting was about with Trump.
Do you want Trump to pardon Hunter?
I have no opinion. I don't care one way or another. If it happens, fine. If it doesn't, also fine.
Do you?
I kind of do. Just, you know, so you know. He, you know, Hunter was pardoned by Hitler. But I like the idea of it.
He should pardon him for the gun crime.
Just that.
Just that one.
And then buy some art.
I'll meet you halfway. We're strong Second Amendment supporters over here. Move that one aside.
You know, I think the president gets to pick some of the things that hang in the White House. He should put up one of Hunter's paintings.
In the bathroom.
Wherever. Doesn't matter to me.
Put it over by the lockers where the cocaine was found.
By the lockers?
Wasn't it in a locker?
I have no idea what the White House is like.
Wasn't the cocaine found in a locker?
Yeah, it was like by some, like where people come in and check everything in and then go into the White House.
Wiggins America when we come back?
Yep.
Tease it up for us.
This is how to avoid job scams. So a lot more people looking for jobs right now. I'm going to try to help you avoid.
Are you looking for a job?
Getting scammed.
I can't say
about that. I'm just trying to help others.
All right. Join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Do you have fractured relationships over the 2024 election? Yes or no? We're going to start the 2 o'clock hour discussing this particularly. And I'm thinking that maybe if people have particularly interesting stories, should we take a phone call or two on that?
Yeah, I would be interested to hear.
If
they do.
I'm more interested in people who have this experience to discuss it. Everything's great. I eliminated all those people from my life a long time ago.
I would call it and be like, no, I don't.
And I'm so aware of that I just said, don't do that. Wiggins America on the Annie Fry Show next. Don't go away.
Wiggins. Oh, Wiggins. Well, I understand the jobs market is not quite what you'd hope it was, and that's a surprise to everybody, because when they release the job numbers, they look pretty good. And then about a month and a half later, they go, just kidding, they weren't as good as we said they were.
Always like that.
So I don't know how that happens. Seems like it's almost propaganda, but this is to help you if you are looking for work. And the first thing is you got to know how job scams work, because this is apparently a big industry now.
Who in here is most likely to be scammed?
Probably Ethan.
He's not even here.
He's taking the shots while he can.
He's in Florida right now.
That's a shame. He can't defend himself. He's probably down there trying to figure out how to get out of a job scam. He's
probably trying to get his Disney World tickets corrected from buying them from somebody who had an offer he couldn't refuse.
I guess we'll have to ask him when he gets here.
He's not at Disney World. I don't think he's at Disney World. I didn't ask him.
Yeah, he's taking care of some business down here.
Yeah.
He's at Magic Kingdom.
Same thing that I would say.
Right, exactly.
I have a Disney podcast.
Yeah. If you are looking for a job, apparently impersonation scams are on a dramatic rise.
Shane Gillis?
Yes. If you see a really good impersonation, you'd be like, "Ah, that was great. You see Gutfeld last night?
That's a scam."
That's not really Donald Trump, though.
Yeah, almost had me. Sounded like him, and then I looked and I said, "There's something off."
Wait a minute, that doesn't look at all like that man. Scammers tend to use the name of an employee and certainly of a large company. And then they craft a job posting that matches the similar positions that might also actually be available. So an initial red flag is to the job almost looks too good to be true. They'll make the job really appealing to as many people as possible, try to cast as wide a net as possible. And again, they're using a real person's name to do this at a company and a real company. So if you're on just regular job search websites, you're going to probably run into these at this point. And the tips I have here, they seem kind of obvious, but I kind of wanted to bring this up because I thought, gosh, it would be easy to fall into this trap because it looks official. So the first one is, if you apply for a job and a recruiter contacts you, it says don't respond to the message right away. Find out a little bit more about the recruiter if you can, and then look them up. And then if you can, contact that person outside of the means that they just contacted you.
Sure.
That's a great way to start.
That's with anything. Anybody who calls you is like, hey, you owe us money. Maybe you went to the hospital for something and you feel like, you know, if you ever have to do something like that, it's like you've got bills from the hospital, you've got bills from the doctor, you've got bills from the anesthesiologist or the specialist or whatever it might be. So when someone calls you and is like, hey, you didn't pay this bill, I'm always like, that's probable. I always call, thank you for the information, and then you find that and call them back.
Yeah.
You don't be like, okay, here's my credit card.
It's really hard. I just got a text the other day from the post office, and it was from USPS.gov or whatever the real website was, but it was all slash some other things that I wasn't familiar with, and I didn't want to click on it. It said, you have a package that's undelivered. And I had just sent something, so I'm like, well, it's very possible that that is that letter. But I don't know, you know, that's when you're the most vulnerable. They just happen to send it to you when you have just done that. So I didn't click on it, but I also didn't know how to find out whether it was real because I didn't have a tracking number. The only thing I had was that website they sent. If I type that in somewhere else, it's going to be the same fake website. So I still might have a package that did not get to where it was going just because I'm trying to avoid a scam. But that's one of the suggestions here is don't reply or click on links sent directly to you.
Yeah.
Seems obvious. But when you're looking for a job and you're like really excited about something, they give the story here of a young woman who thought she got her dream job. And then they said, and this is another one of the points, they say, don't send anything to these people because what they did to her was they walked her through this long process. And that's what's amazing is that they will go through all this time. And you're like, somebody out there could actually devote this time to a job. Like, instead of your job being scamming people, you could just work for a living. But apparently they do it.
I think it's probably lucrative.
It must be, if there's enough people doing it, or it's overseas, have no idea. They walk her through this whole process, and at the very end, they're like, okay, here's your housing allowance. They hadn't sent her anything yet, but they're telling her all this stuff. We actually just need a deposit from you to get you all the work materials, your laptop and everything, and then we'll return that back to you. So she did it.
Oh.
So she did it. So she lost $1,000 or more just because it was all a setup for that $1,000.
It's like my rule of thumb is if you need money from me to give me money, I don't believe you.
I think that's a really good rule of thumb.
Just give me the money.
Another great way, it says, is to research the name of the recruiter that has gotten to you and check if that person has a verifiable social media presence. Very good idea. However, a lot of times they're using that fake name, so you can't just assume that's it. Last one here is, if the company has a job opening on its website, then you could apply and directly through that website. So that's one way to, yeah, you can search for the jobs, but then if you see something you like, you can go to the company directly and apply directly. They also say don't deposit checks. So a common tactic is for scammers to send you a fake signing bonus. I mean, this is legit. This is big stuff. And then ask you to send some money back, supposedly to cover expenses, just like the story I said. So they'll pay you something, but then you got to pay them more back. So it's typical stuff, but it's just in an area that we haven't really talked about with looking for jobs. So there you go.
Great work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And by the way, if you do run into this, you can report the scam, and that'll end it pretty quickly on the FTC's website.
I really feel like any politician who campaigns on the elimination of people who get your cell phone number and scam you or call you and harass you and text you, like, there's a winning issue. If you can figure out how to stop that from happening, do that. All right, let's take a quick break. In the next segment, we're going to ask you this question. If you've got a story you want to tell, do you have fractured relationships over the 2024 election? 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. We'll be back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.